And thank you to everybody for inviting me here to talk to you, and hopefully technology will comply, and to talk to you about celebrating our companionship between Rochester Diocese and the Diocese of Harare, and of course between this church and the Church of St. Paul's in Highfield. Now, eventually, we might have some pictures. But do I need to do anything down here? Ah, there we go. Lovely. It's a little bit dark, this one, I'm afraid, because this was taken at 6:15, and sunset in Africa, when sunset arrives, it arrives. You'll see their first service, 6:00 in the morning. Anyone fancy a 6:00 service? The second service starts at 8:00 and is unlikely to finish much before 11:00. So 3 hours service, and I have to say that sitting in a 3 hour service, it just flies by. You don't know that you're there. So I reckon that gives me about 2 hours to talk to you. But lunches will not eat themselves, so I will try and contain myself to about 20 minutes, if that's okay. So what I want to do first is just to kind of orientate you a little bit geographically. And there we are. There is Zimbabwe, just there. That's its place in the world. It's 80 to 90% Christian, compared to about 65 to 80% for the UK. That's people who profess themselves to be Christian. And here we are. This just gives you a little idea of scale. Here is Zimbabwe compared to the United Kingdom. It's about 460 miles north to south, about 500 miles east to west. And here we are. Here is Zimbabwe amongst its neighbours. It's landlocked. You have Mozambique to the east. You've got South Africa to the south, Botswana to the west, and Zambia there to the north. And Harare, the capital, is up there in the northeast of the country, and it's about nearly 1,500 metres above sea level, which means that they don't have mosquitoes, which is great because it means that if you visit, you don't have to worry about malaria. And so here is Harare itself. There is the boundaries of Harare, and this is the where St. Paul's is, about 5.5 miles to the southwest of the city centre. And here is the district of Highfield, and here's the church, just there in that little corner. And I also want to focus in on just one little area of Highfield. And you can see how densely packed the houses are. And the stands, that's what they call the plots of land, the stands are about 26 metres long by about 12 metres wide. And as you can see, they fill them. And if you're unsure about scale, that's about the size of this church. So it's about sort of 4 stands within this church. But each house will probably house 2 or 3 families. This is not actually Highfield, this is Budarero, which is just slightly, one of the districts just slightly to the west of Highfield. But this is typical of these districts. There may have been tarmac once upon a time, but that's long gone. And so the houses are jam-packed in rough roads. This is what you'll see on many of the street corners, down the streets, pretty everywhere you go. You will find enterprises set up. You've got here, it's a barber shop. This is a bed-making store. It's just a ramshackle collection of tin sheets, and they just work out in the open. And then on the other side, just behind the there, you've got some enterprising person stripping metal out of waste. On the other side of the road, you've got these stands. They're stalls. They're just lashed together bits of wood with a bit of sheeting on top. And people will just sell whatever they can get hold of, whether it's fruit or vegetables or sweets or washing up liquid or phone cables. I mean, you name it, they will sell it. Or try to. So to St. Paul's itself, you'll see here, this is the rector's house, this is the parish office, this is the original church of St. Paul's. And this is the church they use now. They've had to extend it twice, and the engineers are saying, no more! About 1,000 people worship there on a Sunday. This is the old church, the original church, and this is the new church behind it. And here is the current rector, it's Archdeacon, the Venerable Dr. Vincent Fenger, and his church warden, and his church wardens. And this is my host, who's the rector of St. Faith's in Budiriro. And this wasn't the first time I had met Vincent. I was very privileged to go on a tour of the Holy Land in November of 2016. And this was a joint venture between the dioceses of Rochester and Southwark in the UK and all the dioceses in Zimbabwe. And Vincent was one of the party representing Harare. And also representing Rochester, somebody you might recognise. And here we all are. So James and I, and in the middle there, Canon David Kitley, who is the bishop's advisor for overseas links to Bishop James, and representing Harare, the archdeacons Shepherd, Julius, and Vincent here. And in the middle, Farai Mutamiri, who was at the time Dean of Harare Cathedral, but is now, of course, Bishop of Harare. And I was very privileged to be there in January last year, almost to the day, to be there at his ordination as bishop and enthronement. There were 3,500 people packed into the stadium in Harare to see Farai being ordained as bishop. And here are the bishops of the surrounding dioceses laying hands upon Bishop Farai. And somewhere in that scrum is Bishop Simon of Tunbridge, but you really can't find him. I even zoomed in, but he is definitely there. And this is after the enthronement in the cathedral. I just popped this in. This is Father Tendai Mandirawe, who is the link coordinator for Harare. You may or may not hear his name mentioned. Just a little aside, just a note about seasons in Zimbabwe. The dry season starts June, really. June, July, August. There is virtually no rain, and it is cold. Well, cold is a relative term. I was there in July 2017, and the temperature there was exactly the same as it was in the UK, 24 degrees. And I was thinking, this is great, no acclimatization needed. I was walking around in my shirt sleeves thinking, this is very comfortable. And they kept saying to me, are you warm enough? And then it get to about August, September, and it starts to hot up. It gets up to about mid-30s centigrade. And it gets very dry, very baked. And then in the end of October, the rains should start. And they usually start with a bang. Torrential downpours, and then through November, right the way through to March, it's very hot, gets up to 40 degrees centigrade, but it rains, torrential downpours, usually in the afternoon, sometimes slightly less over a day or two. And that goes on till the rains dry up by the end of May. April, May, it starts to cool off, and you get down, back to the dry season. So that's the kind of the cycle of the pattern of seasons in Zimbabwe. When I was there in January last year, the rains had not come. There should have been 2 months of rainfall, and they had had virtually none. And so the wadis were dry, and many of the fields were just unplanted. Because it's very difficult. What do you do? Do you plant the seed when you are supposed to plant it, November, and hope the rains come? Or do you wait for the rains? But then if they don't come, you're late planting. And then you run the risk that the crops will not have matured and be ready for harvest before the next dry season kicks in and everything withers. And what such crops as there were, this is on the road down to Masvingo, were not as far advanced as they should have been for the time of year. But then, of course, last year, what happened in March. Cyclone Idai came in across Mozambique and hit the east of Zimbabwe. And you can see Masvingo down here. So I was traveling down there through that region. So those crops that you saw would have been battered by that cyclone. And so this is why Bishop James, Bishop Simon, launched an appeal last year, as I'm sure you know, for support for Harare. And we were able to send around $21,000 to the diocese to help them with the relief. And about a quarter of that went on buying maize for those that had no food. About a quarter went on seed for the next year's crop. And about a quarter went to support the clergy as they were supporting their communities. And then about a quarter on helping the schools feed the children and on logistics, because with fuel at about $17 per litre of fuel, the most expensive fuel in the world, logistics are very difficult. This was July 2017. It was a reasonable harvest. I just popped this in just to sort of show you some of the staple foods. We've got ground nuts here, what we call peanuts. They're much smaller than we're used to, pea size. You have these spiky things are just cucumbers. This is sorghum, which is a small grain, drought tolerant. And so there's a great push to try and encourage more of this sorghum to be grown. But it's very difficult to break the tradition of maize. Maize is taken, it's rolled, it's made into a mealy meal, and then that's boiled to the consistency of sort of like quite firm mashed potato, and they call it satsa, and that's what this is. And traditionally, they don't use utensils, they take a little pinch of satsa, dip it in the food, and eat it that way. Here's a 10-kilogram bag of mealy meal. This would last a family about a week. And it costs about $50 for a bag. And in November, the government decided to withdraw subsidies because they're trying to balance the books. And the price doubled overnight. $100 a bag. That's nearly $500 for a month. Well, bear in mind that the way those lucky enough to have a job, the lowest paid workers might only be earning £500 a month. You can see how crippling that was. So within a month, the government backtracked and said, oh, no, we'll reinstate the subsidies. I just want to take you back for a moment to 2008. I have here a $100 billion note. I did not know when I went to Zimbabwe that I would return a billionaire, but here we go. When this was issued on the 1st of July 2008, and at that time, this would have bought one of those bags. The next day, I would have needed two of these to buy that bag. At the end of a week, I'd have needed 120 of them. After another month, I would need 1 billion of these notes to buy that bag of meal. That's what was happening during that period of hyperinflation. And so the government sort of, well, you can't drive a lorry load of notes to a store. So they decided to chop 10 noughts off the currency. So suddenly this becomes $10. But it didn't work. 6 months later, they had to chop 12 noughts off the currency. If you had $10,000 worth of savings in 2006 put by for your retirement, by 2009, that would be worth 1 billion trillionth of a dollar. Everybody basically lost everything. And this is just a graph of the inflation rate going through, and you can see, you know, it just shot up to doubling every day. And this line here, pointing to that point there, that's where they are now. The problem is that when the currency collapsed in 2009, the government brought in a basket of foreign currencies and said, well, this is now our legal tender, including the dollar, the pound, the yen, and the rand. And the economy stabilized because people knew that their dollar would be worth the same in a week's time. But there was a problem because the only currency that meant that the country had was what foreign currency was in the country at that time. Because you can't print somebody else's money. You could only get more dollars by selling the goods that you have for dollars. But there's a problem. One, sanctions, very difficult to sell abroad. Two, the farm output was down 45%. Manufacturing output was down 57%. And unemployment was up to 80%. And with that problem of that economy, it was very difficult for the country to pull itself out of its problems. And so last year they reintroduced the Zimbabwean dollar and they scrapped using foreign currency. And inflation has taken off again. And that is a problem. So what can we do? And I want to suggest to you that what we can do is what we would do for somebody who is sick in our own parish. You might pray for them. You might pray with them. You might pray for their symptoms. You might pray for the root cause of their illness. You might pray for those who are trying to make them well. You might send them a card. You might, it's not going to make them well, but it will make them know that there is somebody who cares for them, who is thinking of them. You might send them flowers, a small gift to say that you care. You might go and visit them. That won't make them well either, but they will know that somebody is thinking of them and cares enough about them to actually go and to visit them. And so I leave you, this is the last slide, you'll be glad to know, but I'll just leave you with these few thoughts. Now, I'm sure that you are already doing some of these things, but here are just a few thoughts about what you as a congregation might do. Exchange letters of greeting with St. Paul's to be read out in each other's churches. I mean, that's a great way of actually making that connection. Set up a WhatsApp group. They generally do not have computers, but everybody has a phone. It is their lifeline. And they use WhatsApp. It's an instant way of making contact, a more informal way maybe, but it's great if you can have a group of people that can then share the responsibility of keeping that communication open. You can email them or attach to WhatsApp your weekly news sheets so that there is this idea of the life of the church, because this is a friendship and it's about sharing your lives with one another. So that's the same with sharing upcoming events. I don't know what structures you have, but a link committee. I am very, very grateful to the support that Anne and Ed, Tree and James gives to the group, to the support group that we meet sort of 3 or 4 times a year. I value their presence there. But actually having a group of people working together to foster those relationships and that contact would be a really great thing. And encourage visits as a church. It costs you about £1,000 to fly to Zimbabwe to pay for your visa and sundry other expenses. But they will look after you very well. But that's quite a big ask for a single person, or, you know, it's twice as much for a couple. But as a church, really think about whether you could support somebody to go out to represent you, to actually say, look, we are here, we care for you, we are thinking of you. And maybe even you might, as a church, support somebody from St. Paul's Highfield to come to you, to visit you, to show them where you live and this town of Bromley. So I leave those thoughts with you, and thank you very much for listening. There are some maps in the room with coffee that you might like to look at. This just kind of gives you the idea of the of Zimbabwe and of Harare itself. But I really thank you for supporting this link and for supporting our brothers and sisters in Harare. And if I could call on James to come to the front in recognition of the link that you have. This is a certificate that is signed by both bishops. And I'd just like to read to you what it says. In celebration of their partnership of hearts and minds, the linked congregations of St. Paul's Highfield and St. Peter and St. Paul Bromley have each undertaken to pray for one another in their corporate prayer, encourage one another with regular communication, welcome one another whenever circumstances permit, and grow towards mutual understanding and appreciation. And I'd just like to present that to you, James, on behalf of the church.
Thank you so much.
And thank you.
Here we are.